in 2 weeks. They went from selling 1 out of 20 over 6 weeks to selling 4 out of 20 in 2 weeks.
Wow.
So there's a 300% increase in their sales cycle.
That's incredible.
And when I talk about leverage, the leverage isn't, it can be, you can increase sales by training salespeople, absolutely. But you can't increase the results 300%.
Mm-hmm.
But if you change the structure that they work within, you can just jolt the sales upward by modifying that. We talked earlier about the example of the telemarketers that couldn't sell the $2,200 product. And instead, we first sent a letter, then invited them to a teleconference, and then after that, they bought, and you can't even measure it. It went from zero to 22 sales in an hour. So,
right, and you're giving them value first before you ask for the money.
Correct.
And you really eliminate the salesmen. All you do is turn them into order takers.
Correct. And that's the genius of manipulating the structure that the salespeople operate within. Another case, we had a company that sold products to schools. It's actually a training program for kids with learning disabilities. Their market was private schools. Typically, the salespeople go out. There would be no appointments. You just walk in. Hi, the administrator in. Yeah, can I talk with them? So you sit down with the principal and go, we got this program, works with learning disabilities, here's how it works, and your sales cycle commences, which would run for months because of all the objections and the teachers would have to be involved, a very complex sale. So we walk in with the salespeople, and instead of selling the product, we said, hey, we specialize in working with kids with these learning disabilities. We've got an entire body of knowledge on that your teachers could use right now in the classroom mm-hmm. to work with them better. We'd love to talk at one of your teachers' faculty meetings, which they usually held like once a month in this market. And there will be no sales. We just want to give the information as a service. As soon as they did that, and then he went and talked to the teachers, and then they started hearing this, at the end of the talk, without you even selling, all the teachers would turn to the administrator and go, how fast can we get this program in the school? It overcame all their objections. It shortened the sales cycle, and it doubled sales. 50% more sales closed that way faster. So that's another example of altering the sales process, not just what the people are saying. That's an extraordinarily high leverage area. Another simple one. You heard the 80-20 rule?
Tell me about it.
80% of your results or profits usually come from 20% of your product. 80% of your sales will come from 20% of your salespeople. It's just a rule of thumb. Often ends up being the 5%, 95% rule, where 95% of the results come from 5% of the players.
Mm-hmm.
Went into a company, we said, where are your sales coming from? And they said, well, it's our entire telemarketing force making cold calls. So I'm looking at them, and there's something funny with the numbers. Dug around, I had a guy in a side department in finance who had been tracking, and this gets into a whole lecture on tracking.
Mm-hmm.
I said, where are they really coming from? And he goes, referrals from attorneys and things like that. And so we took a look, and sure enough, 95% of their deals had come from referral sources.
Mm-hmm.
Indirect referral sources, not from the consumer direct marketing that they were doing. Yet, 100% of their marketing budget was aimed at the consumer market, where only 5% of their sales were coming from. And so the suggestion was, let's do this. Why don't we have your salespeople call the referral sources? Because, we knew the type of client they were and whatnot. They did that, doubled sales in 30 days.
Wow.
That's all it took. But nobody had actually looked at their measuring and their tracking and things like that.
That's powerful.
So, and that, of course, comes, and I know you hammer on it and a lot of the marketers hammer on it, which is actually testing your advertising. A lot of companies believe that, well, I'm just getting the name out there. Well, it looks good and we're branding ourselves. And they have no idea of the revenue, the profit, the sales that lose out on. I mentioned earlier voice marketing. Doing the messages to customers. A major bank, credit card company, was making an offer to its millions of customers through direct mail. Mm-hmm. It's pulling a 0.9% result.
All right.
So they go, well, we'll test this voice marketing stuff. We'll just do one message. I said, no, you're going to do two messages. They go, no, we're going to do one. So here we are arm wrestling with the MBAs on the logic of actually testing two messages. And they did not want to.
Okay.
Then when we finally, okay, we'll do it, they didn't want to test the message. The bottom line is before they'd be doing a 0.9 with direct mail, now with no direct mail and Joyce Voice Marketing, they jumped to one of the messages pulled a 1.25% pull. The other one pulled a 2.52% pull. And the two messages were simply, the one was, hi, I'm calling to congratulate you and offer you congratulations because of your your record and your payment schedule, you're now entitled to receive a platinum card. That was one message. The other message was, hi, I'm just calling to alert you that our credit department has authorized you to receive a platinum card.
One
more. Go to the ad agencies and tell them which one of those pulled better for a little fun. And the ad agencies all look at it, and everybody goes with a congratulations message.
Mm-hmm.
And to admit, I thought that was the one that was going to rock. It was just the opposite. That's the one that pulled the least, the 1.25%, which is still a big win. It was a 30% increase in sales. But the one that rocked and jolted upward was the, I'm calling to alert you that our credit department has authorized you to receive. So who could have known in advance what those results would be? You couldn't have. So that's why testing those messages is so critical. We found out in large corporations, for example, like in the voice marketing or in their mail, they always put their slogan in. When we tested voice messaging and they put the slogan in, for example, one company's slogan for the whole campaign was, the more you spend, the more you save. I said, I hate that line. Take it out. And so we're going back and forth. So finally we go, you know, the ultimate answer, let's test. And every message where we stuck, the more you spend, the more you save, it reduced the results 50%. That one line dropped their sales through the bucket. We're working on doing some direct mail for some mortgage companies, and they were doing for refis. And they're sending out the mail, and typically the mail is save $300 to $500 a month. So I was looking at that, and I was going, well, what does that mean? Well, that's kind of like $4,000 to $7,000 a year. Well, what does that mean? I thought, well, that's like getting a raise, a pretty substantial raise. And so we just dropped the line in. You'll save somewhere between, I think it was $300 and $500 or $400 and $700, forget the exact numbers, but a month. That's like getting a $4,000 to $7,000 a year raise. Just that line. Jump sales 20%. Bam. Just from that single line going in there. We were trying to get Fortune 100 clients to come in, marketing VPs of Fortune 100 companies. These guys are impervious. The product increased sales, again, anywhere from 25% to 45%, usually reduced. So the ROI is astronomical. We're talking 500 to 1500% ROIs off these projects. So guess what we put in the marketing messages? Here's how to come on. Why don't you come out to a webinar? We'll show you how to get these kind of ROIs, these kind of results. Nothing. These guys, they weren't that concerned about the results. Don't know why, but it wasn't. So I was thinking about it. One of their clients was going to be doing a talk. Actually, had done a talk and then recorded. And he showed all the results that their company had done and all the 1,500% ROIs and that. So I'm looking at it and go, well, the appeal hasn't been working. Telling Fortune 100 guys they're going to increase isn't working. So I thought, and it was, what's going to work here? I thought, you know what this is like? And that's like getting a peek inside of another company's marketing department, how it operates. So that's what we led with in the headline. And we went from zero people attending the webinar to 700 just by shifting the appeal.
Do you remember the headline?
It was in a letter. Actually, it wasn't even in the headline. It had been in the first sentence. And it was an invitation copy. And it was, here's a rare opportunity to take a look inside the marketing department of another Fortune 100 company.
So this really comes down to understanding your market intimately and knowing what they want.
And testing, because sometimes you can do all the forum groups you want, and you need to research. And a lot of it's just looking at it and going, what else is going to appeal to them? And going forward, we just did one in the mortgage industry. And we've been running results headlines and doing well. I shifted to command respect. That was the main line, command respect. It jolted sales 50%. There's a couple key territories or leverage points. You start creating, so it's like, where do I create? And you look for the leverage. And then within those leverage points, you experiment and test. And the leverage you reap is just incredible.
Robert, this has been, I can't wait to go re-edit it and listen to it. This is some excellent advice. Well spoken. Very good.
And the big idea is small changes, big results.
Yeah.
If they're strategic changes, not changing the color of the wallpaper in the bathroom, or going after the marketing communications,
and
going
so,
after the how they define their business,
mm-hmm.
and that one's so important because that's where all your USPs and everything come from, as well as the opportunities for joint ventures, as well as the opportunities for new products. It's how they actually look at what business they're in, and so two people next door to each other in dry cleaning can be in radically different businesses in their heads, and that'll affect how they do business. And that'll have a huge result. Segmentation's big. Yeah, and I really encourage your consultants to go after segmentation because it opens up new markets.
And what would you say to a consultant in relation to startup versus setup?
Setups. I've done startups, and they're tough. A setup, you walk in, they've got a sales force. They're already doing direct mail. They have some process. They may not be making as much money as they want, but they're successful. A startup, you start starting from ground zero. The guy's got some product idea, and they haven't even made their first sale yet. There's a process you have to go through, and I always say strategy is a hypothesis. Just because you think of an idea that you think is going to work doesn't mean it's going to work.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you spend hours writing a business plan doesn't mean the market's going to accept it. What's the old joke? If you want to see God laugh, show them your business plan. Companies that are setups have already gone through that trial and error process. They're not doing as good as they could be, but they've made it through the basic answers of who are my customers, what's my product, and what business am I in. With a startup, you're having to test everything all the way through. Take this voice marketing company. When they first started out, it was like, well, anybody with a database that can call the customers is a client. So, I mean, they're calling everyone. They're calling State Farm insurance CEOs. They're calling banks and finance, credit card companies, mortgage industry, all that stuff. Well, about halfway through the process, mortgage ended up being pretty good. As a client, Fed regulations came in and said you can't call people that aren't your clients.
Mm-hmm.
Completely wiped out that side of the business. Now they're still calling everyone else, finance, Home Depot, you name it. So we sat down and analyzed, well, what makes a great client? And we took a look at the results they had from a year. We created criteria. We went through all the criteria. And kind of the answer came out. I said, you know what? Retailers. There's good repeat sales. They've got big customer bases, and they actually have them.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a constant reason for them to contact, which creates constant resales. The owner took a look, and he made a bold decision and completely redirected the company and all its sales force into the retail industry. Salespeople are screaming about it.
Mm-hmm.
This is terrible. We need to sell everybody, all of that stuff. But the first proof was they nailed a client that was worth $1 million a year to them.
There you go.
And then they went. So on a startup, you just have to be difficult because there's so much trial and error and failure. And that doesn't mean you don't or quit or lay down and die. It's realizing the fact you're in a dynamic process. And you don't know it all. You have to test.
All right. Is there any other advice you could give any of the consultants from your experience as far as succeeding in this business?
Get $1 million mailings and start handwriting out the letters. you got to get started. It's a hard thing. Like, I can write letters. I don't always like writing them, but I can. The PR side of it, I don't have a desire for it. It's a weakness. You can do it for a smaller business.
Mm-hmm.
But one of my clients, they're dealing with Fortune 100 retailers. They need a professional PR firm that's setting them up. For example, they work them into Peppers and Rogers. Do you know who they are?
No, I've heard of them. I don't know who they are.
They're pretty much the king daddies when it comes to the whole CRM customer marketing movement.
Okay.
Anybody Fortune 500 probably does business with them. The PR firm, not only did they get this client major articles in major magazines focused at retail executives, but they got them in front of Peppers and Rogers, and they just did a case study on them and are now releasing it this month to all the pretty much anybody that does CRM, not only retail but all the other. So to come in, and if you're not experienced at PR and pull that off, is going to be very difficult. Know your strengths as a consultant. Find out early, are you better at doing joint ventures and deals? Are you better at writing? Are you better at looking at a sales force and restructuring it and letting other people do the work? You know, can you go in and do a segment analysis, turn them loose, and let the client go after it without you guiding them through it? So I think that you don't have to do it all. As your consultants go through and you're getting your group together, there will be some in that group that are aces at coming up with killer USPs. There's going to be others that are brilliant at writing if you give them one, but really have difficulty conceptualizing it. Know your strengths. And Richard nailed it in some of the interviews with you that I heard. Like early on, I think, I thought, I'm stronger at the conceptualization. I can look at these things and come up with paths and routes and angles and call them positioning or strategic positions or USPs and that. Quick, it's easy for me. Some of the other stuff's real hard. So I used to think I was going to go into these businesses and say, wave my magic strategy wand.
Mm-hmm.
And walk away and get up a lot of money. And you know what? They have the business owners themselves don't want to be copywriters. You've got to get in and execute at some point.
Right.
But yeah, I think with your consultants working together, if a guy's having problems with the copy, someone else can take a look over his shoulder and make suggestions and help him get it through. And same with USPs or if they don't know, okay, I've done this and this and this, how else can I grow the business? Because you're really, your repeat money, I mean, I love Richard's his seven-step process. once you've gone through those seven, if you think about things like segmentation, about redefining the business, is that you can always create more business for yourself. And then the other one is the reengineering the sales process or marketing process. You know, when that's popping 150%, 300% in 2 weeks, I kept my mouth shut about it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I go in and look at it. You know what? It's going to help people make money. Go do it. It's a way of thinking, and maybe we can have another chat another time on mindsets and how important it is for you as a consultant.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're going to do is walk in, and they're going to tell you, the client will tell you a problem. My sales force needs to close more. So you're going to run out and try and find all these solutions on tricky closes they can use. Or they need to sell more, or whatever it is. And I look at it and then just kind of chunk up. Well, do you want them to learn objection handling? And they'll prescribe to you what they need.
Mm-hmm.
We need to learn objection handling techniques. So, and I say, well, do you want to learn objection handling or do you want to increase the sales? Well, I want to increase the sales. Great. Do you want to increase the sales or do you want to make more profits? Well, each one of those logical levels you go up exponentially increases the opportunities you have to grow that business that don't just have to do with the initial problem that you went in and looked at.
All right. You look at the real problem.
Right. The more you look at the real opportunity, if that makes sense.
Well, on a side note, the voice broadcasting.
Yes.
Do you think this voice broadcast, I'm sure it could, but do you have any ideas of how it could be integrated for generating leads, for appointments, for opportunity analysis, effectively?
Yeah, I do. It's like I was going to test them a little bit with my client.
Okay.
First, you have to know the law, and the law is you can't approach a consumer.
It's got to be a business to business.
It has to be an existing customer, or it has to be a business.
Okay.
And then the problem with businesses is they don't have, if they have more than five people, they got a switchboard or something that you're going into.
Right.
So you're really not getting something in. I did some early testing with Staples, and they actually now use voice marketing because guess what? They're going after small business people.
Mm-hmm.
So they can use it, go after them to help increase their seminars or the pull to the stores or discounts, whatever they're doing. So I think we can run some tests.
So would a home business with a fictitious business name qualify as a business?
I think so. I'll have to look, and I'll have to talk with my client and the lawyers and get it going. They're also... Right now, their system is built to work with huge lists. So for mom and pop, it's not going to make sense for them to even talk to you. I guess what I'm saying is they're redoing their system so it's completely automated so that you yourself could go in, leave the message, and upload your list.
Okay, that's great.
And run it on your own. They've dumped millions into technology just to get deliverables up and algorithms so that when the answering machine answers, it rates the right seconds, and it's incredibly complex. But that should be available probably in 6 months, where anyone can go in, even a small business, and upload their customer database.
Is anyone doing this now?
Yeah, there's some of the competitors would be Soundbite, Sound Media. They don't make the real money unless they're dealing, because it's only 6 cents a message. They're going to probably come up with a model that's like 10 cents a message for entrepreneurs.
Right.
And run it through that way.
It's still worth it.
Right. I've got two campaigns, one for my mortgage software client.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a database of 40,000 originators that are leads. They aren't even customers.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a voice marketing. I'm using voice marketing to invite to a website for a free report. And I'm generating a 3 to 4% response rate on that.
Who's that going at? Mortgage brokers?
Originators, yeah.
And what is it? What's it saying?
It's essentially saying, hey, just a quick heads up. We've just released an important report online that shows you Big Promise. And I can't go into it because it's current and competitive.
Okay.
But basically, whatever your promise is, and you can get it by going to www.getthisnow.com.
And it's converting 3% to the site.
Yeah.
And they're downloading the report.
Right.
That's
those 10% will buy. So it's generating $150,000 in sales a month.
Wow, that's sweet. Now, is that a mortgage originator in the office, or is he working out of his home, or what? It's going cold.
Yeah, so they don't even know who this company is, and they go cold and get a 3%. You know, then hand them to Salesforce and close 10%.
Wow.
So it's and it's part of it's the reports and the setups and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So does voice broadcasting look pretty, I mean, look like it can be around for a while legally?
Probably.
To businesses?
Yeah, I mean, my poor client sweated this through. It looks like it'll be legally for existing customers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the law can't touch it. And especially for opt-in. Usually when you call, you leave an opt-out. So it can
Right.
Make the anger off somewhere.
Can you do that in the voice broadcast?
Huh?
An opt-out in the voice broadcast?
Yeah, in essence, it goes, if you have any more customer questions, call 1-800-whatever.
Yeah.
So then they go out to that, and it goes, if you want to be removed, give us here, and then the name goes on through to the do not call directory.
I hope you've enjoyed this recording with Robert Stoffer. This is an exclusive interview only for HMA Marketing Consultants. This is the kind of training you'll get ongoing in the HMA training section of our site. You can print the transcripts out and read and use some of the ideas Robert's talked about. If you'd like to get in touch with Robert for any reason, please email me at michael@hardtofindseminars.com or call 858-274-7851. Here's another bonus tip from Michael Senoff, hardtofindseminars.com. And it's a collection of recordings on marketing consulting. I had met a gentleman named Richard who is one of the world's best marketing consultants, and I have 12 hours of audio interviews all on the subject of marketing consulting. We also have downloads to over 23 reports on the subject of marketing. In this section of recordings, you will find a multitude of ideas that will give you very valuable ideas on how to build and grow your business, and also how to teach others how to grow their business with simple, no-cost, low-cost techniques. If you go back to hardtofindseminars.com to the main page, you'll see across the top in white consulting services. If you click on that page, there's a form that will take you into a private secret section of my site I've set up just for you with all these recordings. All you have to do is fill out your name and your information, and you'll be whisked away to Consulting Secrets, where we have thousands of dollars worth of free downloadable audio recordings in MP3 and Flash, also the written printed transcripts in PDF that you can start learning from starting today. This information is hot, so get on over to hardtofindseminars.com, check out Consulting Secrets.